the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome into the latest edition of the Spot Track Podcast. Brandon Kravitz here, along with the man who makes it all go around here at SpotTrack.com, Mike Jannetty. Mike, how's Wave 3 treating you in NFL free agency?
Not too bad. Some of the bigger teams that have waited and been sitting on the sidelines here are starting to get active, right? And we're seeing Miami and Buffalo start to pump some contracts out. And now I imagine it's time for Dallas to get involved here, right? The NFL world is waiting for that. But it's probably slowly and surely converting into trade and extension season, which is super fun for me because this is where some of those hard work offseason projections kind of come to fruition, and we'll see where some of these quarterback numbers land and things like that. So we're heading towards the bigger portion of this, which is what's funny, Brandon, is free agency used to be a month, like a solid month of everybody hammering every single deal, right? This thing literally died down by last Thursday.
Yeah,
truly, like the reports out of the league, the numbers that come to us sometimes, gone. They're gone at this point in time. Right now, we're running on fumes trying to figure out how to connect some of these dots. It's really funny how this has become a 48-72 hour situation, and then it's on to the next. But I guess that's just the animal of the beast here.
What do you think has changed in that regard? Why is it different now?
You know, a lot of the talk turns to gambling immediately. I know that's sort of the hot button issue of today anyway, but I feel like everybody's now in on, well, okay, now we've got all these reshuffles and players on new teams and with new quarterbacks and new coaches. How does it all line up for fantasy purposes and gambling purposes? And we're already there, and it's freaking March, right? Yeah. We're already there. But that to me is where the conversation has switched to. And I'm still trying to figure out how much Cedric Wilson cap charge for 2024 is going to be on the Saints, and how the hell they're going to deal with Chase Young's surgery and all this stuff. But you know, it's just the nature of what I do versus the nature of, I guess, what's most popular with this sport, which is the money that comes in and out from the gambling aspect.
But look, at least all the people that I talk to, for sure, whether that's the direction they go in or not, everybody always veers on back. So what's that contract look like again? Let me make sure, double check.
Especially when the going gets tough, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. That's what Spot Track is all about. This is a fun time in the sports landscape, too. Recording this on Thursday, round one of the NCAA tournament, baseball. Mm-hmm. Quietly, real quick before I dive back into NFL free agency, what about Major League Baseball, who's done a lot of things right over the last year plus, still kind of like secretly starting their season over in Japan? I find it sort of bizarre. I don't consider it opening day. You know, opening day is March 28th.
I think that's okay. And I kind of wish that Major League Baseball had marketed it that way. Like, don't worry, we're not taking away your opening day. It's still going to exist, and it's going to be better than ever because of these things that we've done, right? That's what they missed. In adding this, they should have pumped up next Thursday or Friday. By the way, why is it Thursday? What are we doing here, right? but it's next Thursday. To me, I'm just treating this as this is the international opening day, and then next Thursday will be the American opening day. And that's, by the way, if that's the route they want to go, perfectly fine, because they're making millions off of these last 2 days in Korea and internationally speaking, in terms of the revenue and the marketing. So if this is what it takes to ensure that guaranteed contracts stay and that the tax threshold keeps raising, just do it. But have a better plan for the 90% of your fans who are going to be ticked off that opening day has been robbed from them. You know what I mean? Right. Like just have plan B in place.
That's a Dodger Padre fan problem. I refuse to acknowledge this. So let's get back to NFL free agency. Things starting to quiet down a little bit, as you mentioned, and it happened quicker than perhaps expected. But how would you grade this year's activity, this year's round of activity thus far?
Sure. So while I'm talking here, let me pull up some numbers. I can tell you right now, overall numbers, at least for now, we're down. In terms of total value and things like that, but the guarantees look really good. If you're just talking transaction wire, it's been BB plus, super, super strong offseason in terms of some shocker trades, which I don't think we're even done with, right? I think Brandon Ayuk is going to move here, and it seems like Pittsburgh and Carolina are still going to be active with a couple of moves and possibly out of the Chiefs as well. So I think the activity's been strong, upper threshold. The overall numbers seem to be lagging behind a little bit. And that's interesting because we've had a you know, we've got a starting quarterback in Kirk Cousins sort of leading the way here, which is super rare for an offseason. But we're over 50% on guarantee at signing. We're almost a 57% of total value contracts being guaranteed for practical purposes. Those are super great numbers, at least heading into week three here of our situation. So I'm pleased with the layout of these initial contracts. But, you know, for the next month, that's going to be flooded and bombarded by veteran minimum contracts with $40,000 guarantees and then eventually into the UDFAs as well. So we're coming out strong, but I have a feeling it's going to taper off pretty quickly.
It felt overall like a really good free agency. Yeah. You know, we're not always delivered with these star names. This year we got it. We got some big quarterback movement too. Justin Fields and Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson. Yeah. Checked a lot of boxes in the revival of the running back position. I want to get into that a little bit as well.
Well, if you think about it this way, Brandon, right? We had a historic free agent contract in Cousins, top in every regard, guarantees and everything. We had a historic dead cap move in Russell Wilson, and that just may be par for the course now. We had at least one player at every position go big, right? So Calvin Ridley went way bigger than any wide receiver, even though there was supply in free agency, supply via the trade, and supply via the draft. So Calvin Ridley's contract is kind of like the unicorn here. And then we had Barkley go big, even though supply is massive free agency-wise at the running back position. So I think that's a positive that at least one player stood apart in their position group and teams bit. Teams actually bid in from a guarantee standpoint. You need that to keep the train rolling. Otherwise, it's going to start to look like the NBA where anybody who's here is here for a reason and they're getting garbage contracts because that's just how the league is working now. So I'm glad that it feels like there's some sustainability with this sport and in free agency because this is not a week that I want to dissipate at all. I want it to feel like chaos like it has for the past 5 years.
Right. And I think that people like yourself, maybe that have looked at bloated contracts in the past and been like, that's not really the way that we should be doing this.
Yeah.
May look at that in a very short-sighted view and say, well, you're not pro player then. You don't want them to make money. You know, No, I want them to make money for a long period of time, not have a couple of players, the Albert Hainsworths of the world completely distort what teams, you know, think they can do in free agency. I think there was sort of a period that existed where teams were scared to spend money because there was so much dumb money that mm-hmm. had been spent over the years. And it does feel like things are starting to sort of find their level again in a healthy way.
Yeah, it's a really nicely framed point because the point of me drawing the potential outline in contracts and writing reality check pieces that poke holes in the structure of these deals. And by the way, you're absolutely right. And that's to that guarantee point that I led with here is they're getting better. The fluff is much, much, much less than we've seen in previous years. The point of me doing that isn't to slam the player or the agent. It is simply to say, I want you to have more control, player and agent. I don't want the team to have the control here. They have too much control with everything else that goes on with the business side of this sport. So if you can control how things operate by taking a smaller contract, not monetarily, from a length standpoint, taking a smaller contract that puts the onus back on the team. This is Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins to a T. Kirk Cousins pressured his team every single offseason because of the structure and the length of his contracts and the guarantee amount of his contracts. Now Dak is doing it again in Dallas. This is what's supposed to happen with star players. This is what basketball players have been doing since LeBron figured this out. God, maybe 15 years ago, right? When did LeBron figure out the 1+1? And then everybody yeah. else did this. This is what it's about. It's about constantly putting pressure on your front office, not only from a singular standpoint with your contract, if you're only going to be here for a year and then you can opt out and go somewhere else, we better get everybody we can possibly get for this 1 year and go all in. That's the mindset. That's the mindset that teams should have. Forget these dynasty windows and these six-year runs, right? Think about 1, 2, 3 years and make it as impactful as possible. That's why this sport is thriving because the idea of the Albert Hainsworth contract is gone and the whole sport is better for it.
Yeah, and to the LeBron point, is he really the first athlete that you can remember using his contract as a weapon in leverage?
It's a really great point. It's probably something I should do some homework on. He's got to be in the conversation if he's not, you know, and I don't go back too far with basketball. To me, basketball would be the sport where it would happen because It's such a small roster. Superstars matter so much more in that sport than really any other sport. So for now, I'm just going to say yes, it's probably him. But if anybody out there knows of a better situation where somebody actually said, I'm only taking a 1 or 2 year deal because I don't trust this franchise for 4 years.
Yeah,
it'd be great to bring that name to light because it's an important way to look at things, right? It's an important way to change how teams really held hostage some of these players with long, arduous contracts.
I would probably start with Michael Jordan because that's where the influx of money started. And I think that's when the savvy athlete era sort of began. I know he pushed a lot of that money for a long part of his career. He was not the highest paid player in the league. And then all of a sudden it ballooned up there at the end. I think this was probably something you and I talked about when The Last Dance came out during 2020, but we'll table that for another day. That could be a fun summer discussion. We can do a whole podcast on that. Mm-hmm. Who, as far as the guys that are still out there, who are the remaining free agents that you're still intrigued by in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, the quarterback well has dried up pretty quickly. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, I'm not sure he's got a job anywhere right now. We'll see if somebody latches on to him later on. Maybe he's waiting out an injury himself. I mean, there's some defensive backs that I think should be starting week one, right? Xavien Howard, possibly J.C. Jackson and Jamal Adams. For sure, Justin Simmons, who was released out of Denver during that exile. Even Eddie Jackson, it was a 16-game starter last year, and Quandre Diggs in Seattle. I mean, you could throw $50 million at those four players right there and literally have a starting secondary for week one. So that's the position I'm looking at. The problem is I think it's a really strong safety draft. I'm not sure on the cornerbacks. I've only heard a couple of names. So maybe that's the position that's bagged up here quickly. There's still some wide receivers out there, right? I'm surprised that Tyler Boyd hasn't been signed. That's a name that I think has been underrated on Cincinnati for the past couple of seasons. And the fact that they haven't brought him back kind of intrigues me as well. But it's getting pretty bare. Let's put it that way. The cupboards are pretty bare. And if you're looking for a running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire might be your best option.
Oh, boy.
Don't get too excited about your team with that.
Well, they went quickly. And you detailed that pretty good on your Twitter account, at SpotTrack, if you're not following already. What are you doing with your life? After doing a full... the pack, all of a sudden those contract numbers make a lot more sense. You know, I know that I should know better by now. Okay. I'm on this podcast with you. You're on my show every week. When I first saw Saquon's contract, I thought, man, is he giving the Eagles a discount here? Not really the case, especially when you compare his guarantees against others at the position.
Yeah, he garnered $11 million more guaranteed than any other running back in free agency. And that's saying a lot because I'm not sure he's, you know, 2-3 times the running back that any of the other players are. Some of these are team oriented, right? Like Josh Jacobs, we talked about that one. The Packers just don't guarantee base salaries. So he was going to get a signing bonus and that was going to be it in terms of guarantee. It's very likely he gets 2 for $20, $25 or $26 and kind of matches Saquon Barkley in terms of the practicality of his contract. DeAndre Swift with $15 million guaranteed. That one seems underrated to me. That seems like maybe the Bears stole a little bit from a player that should. I mean, he's the youngest player on this board in terms of running backs that were signed. And we forget that because he's been tossed around now here from Detroit to Philly and now to Chicago. There's high upside with that player if that Chicago offense can figure it out with Caleb Williams asterisk and DeAndre Swift. and I do like Devin Singletary on less than $10 million guaranteed joining a Giants offense that is now just defunct. I mean, they didn't add a wide receiver yet. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be, Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, or draft pick. And what we do know is Singletary kind of held up Houston's offense for a while there while C.J. Stroud figured it out in Houston last year. So I do like where things went. I do like Derrick Henry in Baltimore on a $9 million guarantee. I just think, you know, if this was a wide receiver crop, is it triple these numbers? Truly, is it triple these numbers? Is Saquon Barkley a $60 million guarantee as a wide receiver? I think he might be.
Yeah, that's probably true. And then you think about whoever the equivalent to Josh Jacobs would be in the wide receiver market. Is he making, so you're saying 36?
Yeah.
36 guaranteed, which I guess, so what were Calvin Ridley's guarantees again?
50. And then you had Darnell Mooney and Gabriel Davis get about 24-25 with a 3 for 39. So
yeah, like in the wide receiver equivalent, yeah. Gabe Davis is not the wide receiver that Josh Jacobs is, a running back. So I think you're spot on. Almost, you might even be underselling it a little bit, if anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, wow. But I'm just glad that we got the numbers we got. I posed the poll question before March 13th. Was there going to be a single running back to garner $12 million guaranteed in the next week or so? And we had three. So to me, that's a win. That's a huge win, because that was the number. That was because that means more than 1 year was guaranteed. And the fact that we have three of those players, including a little bit with Singletary in year two, that's a win. So you can talk about where this position is going. I do think there'll be a bit of a cycle where we have a couple of bad years and then maybe a year like this. But like I said last time with you, I'm fascinated with where the pool of running backs starts to come from and what it looks like, right? How is the college and high school running back going to shift to change this even more? And is the game itself just going to start to take this position out of play? We'll see.
That, you know, I think it's fair to ask that question, but it's still at the high school level, such mm-hmm. an important position that, and such a fun position to play if you're good at it, that I just don't know if it's going to be phased out the way that we would fear.
But you and I both know that, especially the academies and some of the high schools that get a ton of notoriety, they are thinking about the NFL draft. It is a part of their process. It's not even about D1 anymore, right? Because my God, with Nil and all that, it's a business. By the time these guys are sophomores in high school, they're thinking about the end game. And there's a lot of moms and dads and agents and PR people attached to these 15-year-old kids that are looking at the tea leaves and looking at SpotTrack's rankings and saying, why the hell would I let my kid be a running back as a junior in high school? You know what I mean?
At least because your kid's going to be 5'10", 225.
Yeah.
That's
one. Yeah. Yeah. But you convert him to a cornerback, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's going to be a lot of that. There's going to be a lot of positional battles. And people that are educated on this stuff are going to say, no way. Why would I put myself through the CTE issues and all the possibilities for minimal guarantees in a league that is paying exponentially better at pretty much every other position? So the pipeline may get interesting, you know, over the next couple of years, knowing what we know and seeing what we see.
It'll make for a good 30 for 30 in about 5 years. Real quick before we move on from the NFL, Mike Williams signed with the New York Jets after being cut by the Chargers. And it seems like Joe Douglas is scoring well in the eyes of analysts as far as the moves that he's made and solidifying that offensive line for the Jets. What say you as far as what New York has done to try and see if they can salvage this Aaron Rodgers experience?
I do like it. I like the fact that Tyrod Taylor was one of the first signings, because they are not being shy about the fact that Aaron Rodgers is 40 years old, thinking about other things in his life, clearly, and coming off a massive injury. So they have at least shored up, maybe to the best possibility, the backup quarterback role, so that their season doesn't turn into a dumpster fire like it did last year, the second, you know, five snaps into it. And then it's all about the offensive line. Yeah, they've added three players. They're going to draft probably one or two more. I saw some pretty good analysts basically say they have done such a good job targeting their holes in the first week of free agency that they can be kind of reckless with this upcoming draft. And I like that. I like the idea. By the way, they're taking a quarterback, right? I mean, they have
to. At some point.
Yeah, they're taking a quarterback, if not this year, and they should this year, certainly in 2025. But the time to think about next is right now as well. So I got to say this, though. The first thing I thought of when I saw Mike Williams signing with the Jets had nothing to do with the Jets. It had to do with MetLife Field. What is he thinking? How many NFL players have torn up knees on this turf?
That's such a good point.
And this guy coming off two massive injuries is going to start his season at MetLife Field. I just think this is a nightmare waiting to happen, but I do like the fit with Aaron Rodgers. This is certainly a position of need, and he maybe was at that point in time the best available. So good for them, but I'm terrified for Mike Williams.
Yeah, I'm terrified for Aaron Rodgers again, because yeah. I'm not convinced this guy's going to make it through a season at this age and off of that injury. So let me just get this out there. The Jets pick at 10. Are you saying
that
a quarterback is in range there, or they're going like the Spencer Rattler third round route?
Look, if somebody drops, like if Penix or Bo Nix or those guys are there, right? You got to think about it. You got to think about it because
Rodgers will be like, again.
Oh, really? I can't wait for the reaction. I hope there's a Zoom camera on him, right? That's all I'm asking for here. But I don't think it's bad business. Let me put it that way. You spent a lot of last year rounding together this most of this roster for Aaron Rodgers, and you kind of had to put it on pause. So they filled in some blanks. They're at least one more year ready for this systematically. I do think you can do now and next year in one swept, you know, full swept move here in April. And with the quarterback crop being so good, at least from the outside looking in, I don't know why they would pass on that, even though the fan base might actually go freaking bonkers.
Yes.
If Michael,
I'm going to put this at a 2% chance. I can't stand with you.
You think it's a mid round pick?
I think they could use a second. This feels very much like when the Bucks drafted Kyle Trask in the second round.
Yeah,
first round pick says we don't really trust you.
Yeah,
you don't draft quarterbacks in the first round.
They don't have a second round pick, Brandon. So it's pick 10 or pick 72 right now.
Yikes. Yeah. All right. Well, maybe they trade back.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up some draft picks, New York. And then round out that offseason, Joe Douglas. You're doing a great job. Let's get to this Shohei Ohtani story. We'll get to the theft aspect of things. There's some wild stuff coming out about him and his interpreter. Then we'll dive into that as much as we are able to. And as much as it makes sense for this podcast. But the story that's come out about the Dodgers' reaction to Ohtani choosing to defer his $680 million was holy bleep. I'll keep this podcast and the profanity out of it, but it started with an F and it has four letters. You can fill in the blanks. But when Andrew Friedman, the president of baseball operations, was asked, is that a good holy blank or a bad holy blank? He said, good, very good. I want to go back to that moment when you found out. Is your reaction the same as the president of baseball ops for the LA Dodgers when you saw the deferral?
I was absolutely floored. I thought it was a typo. Truly, I thought it was a Twitter typo. And then I waited for a couple more people to say it in a different way, in a different mindset. And when I realized that that was actually the number, that 680 was actually the deferral number, I will say this. If anybody was going to do it, it was going to be this guy. And some of the numbers that came out from Sportico yesterday in terms of endorsements and things like that back up the reasoning behind this, right? This guy, even with a $2 million salary, is going to make $65 million cash this year. When you talk about $2 million on the field and $63 million from endorsements, he knew that. That, you know, Nez Bilelo knew that. CAA Sports knew that. Everybody knew that. Certainly the Dodgers knew that. So it's, he's really not taking a pay cut at all when you factor in everything all encompassing. So why put the onus on the Dodgers to front load so much of this and make their cash and tax situation such a struggle for the next 5 to 6 years, which is what it's going to be with Betts and with Freeman's contract and all these other things going together. And oh, by the way, it easily was the singular reason that Yamamoto's on this roster right now, which had to be part of the mindset with Shohei Ohtani and the agency and certainly the team. But yeah, the Dodgers being floored like this is just the best, because nobody saw this coming to this degree. Were they going to ask him to defer half of it? For sure. Right. And deferrals were absolutely going to be a part of this conversation because of everything we just talked about. But 680 is insane. Nobody will ever do it again, in my opinion. And boy, oh boy, now with some of these allegations, I'm terrified for the guy. Because my first thought, Brandon, when all this stuff started to come out, and we know nothing, so I'm not going to sit here and speculate about any of it. My first thought was, because I've done a lot of this with NFL players who've been suspended and been arrested and all this stuff, and I've had to read so much legalese in terms of what the NFL does and how they treat their contracts. My first thought was, it is so much easier to recoup money that they do not have. It's so much easier. Every lawyer, every agent, everybody I've talked to with this stuff with the NFL says, if they have the money in their account and you've already paid them the cash, it is so much more work, so much more legal money, so much more time to try to get that money back. But if they don't have it, right? We talked about this with Ben Simmons quite a bit. Ben Simmons and his pay structure, it was important to find out what he had been paid and what was still sort of in balance in the escrow account when Philadelphia was sort of going through the ringer with them and now Brooklyn as well. The fact that he does not have $699.7 million, right? If I try to do the math in my head here, based on two games, the fact that he doesn't have that money in his bank account right now is just going to make things harder for him. I can tell you that right now. So whatever happens, whatever's real, whatever's, I'm just saying that part of it. The deferrals themselves could really turn and bite him in the butt here.
Interesting. Because part of the other part of the story that doesn't involve the gambling story that we'll get to in a second, you touched on there, is Tom Verducci, who did the work on this, said that the California Center for Jobs and Economy estimated that if Ohtani is not living in California by the end of the contract, he could avoid $98 million in income taxes. So it sounds like whatever benefit he might end up getting at the end of this contract could be negated if this the legal side of this gambling story does not go his way.
Yeah, and there's a long way to go to get to that point. But the tax side is unbelievably interesting. And to the point now where I think a few weeks ago, Gavin Newsom and the state of California have basically started to push back and say, whoa, this can't happen. This is ridiculous that this guy has agreed to $700 million in our state. And we're going to see basically, pigeons of that in terms of tax benefit. It's a loophole. It's always been a loophole. The same loophole exists with signing bonuses. That's why some of these signing bonuses in other sports are so gigantic. And I think I've referenced that here a few times, but there will be multiple battles going on with this contract, whether it's tax oriented, whether it's this gambling stuff, whether it's just the deferral process. And should this be allowed? I have a feeling there are a lot of teams looking around saying, wait a minute, right? All we have to do is this. We just have to coax the guy, maybe find him enough endorsements to the point of where he'll agree to this. Because if that's really what has happened here. And I can tell you right now, if Patrick Mahomes was allowed to do this, he would do this. He would do this with the Chiefs in a heartbeat if this was allowed and the CBA didn't negate it like we know it does. So I do think that there'll be multiple people from multiple angles attacking this contract for what it is, for what it stands for, and for how the cash flow works. And unfortunately, the investigation going on right now is going to be a big, big part of that.
So the other part of this story is exactly that. Apparently, and this is the way that I originally read the story, but it seems like there are other ways to interpret this, is that he was the victim. Ohtani was the victim of a massive theft from his interpreter. His interpreter had big debts to a bookmaking operation in California. That operation is under federal investigation. I'm assuming that that's how his name came up, and that he took $4.5 million from Ohtani. Now, there are those, based on the way that this story has been portrayed and what the interpreter has been allowed or not allowed to say to reporters that are looking into this, that this is not reflecting well on Shohei Ohtani, and there could actually be some blowback on him. We know how strict baseball is when it comes to all things sports betting. I'll just ask you this very simple question, and we can leave it there because we don't know a lot about this.
I'm taking Houston. Is that what you're asking me? Houston what? Houston win the Final Four tournament. That's what I'm going to think. No, that's not the question.
No, I have that too. Yes, we got that too. You're like, yeah, no, let's jump to the Final Four. You want to talk brackets? What about 12-5 upsets? Great. Where do you think this story goes? I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that's a big question. I can tell you right now that the Dodgers beat reporter, the guy that's going to be closely tied to this, is saying right now, literally as of minutes ago, that Shohei Ohtani is not under investigation in any regard. So let's start there. Because all the tweets you're reading are just subjective tweets. They're just having fun with Michael Jordan and everything else. We've read them all, right? I will say this. The timeline of events yesterday, which are so weird, and it's one of the reasons why this is going to escalate quickly, leads me to believe that there will be an investigation at some point in time into that $4.5 million payment and the knowledge of it from Shohei Ohtani. Because, and this is one of the reasons I sat up at 10 o'clock at night last night, reading the freaking CBA again, as I told you, I end up doing so many times. If he had knowledge that the $4.5 million was going to cover an illegal gambling debt to one of his best friends in the world, that unfortunately is considered aiding and abetting. He would be a co-conspirator, and he would be subject to obviously federal charges, but also charges that go against the Major League Baseball CBA. And then it becomes, was baseball involved? Was it other sports? To kind of go against, would it be a smaller suspension, a ban, et cetera? That's where this is targeting. And I've read a bunch of really nice pieces on that this morning. It is simply going to be about, was Shohei involved with that payment? And did he know what that payment was going to cover? And if that's the case, baseball's going to have to step in and get involved, because that is clearly against the rules of their Rule 21 Amendment Attachment 60, which I now have memorized in the CBA, which clearly states that that is considered aiding and abetting. So I'm terrified for this. This is unbelievable heavy. That we're a month removed from the largest sports contract in the history of sports, of American sports. And now we're here, but I don't know that there's much way around at least an investigation happening. And at that point in time, it's, does he play? Are they going to have to put him on administrative leave while they investigate him? And there's a lot to get to here in terms of, like, your fantasy and if you're a Dodgers fan and et cetera. But that's the read for me. And again, I'm speculating based on yesterday's timeline and what I've read of the CBA. It could eventually get to that point. I sure hope it doesn't. I sure hope this was completely exterior. And his name is here because he was helping a friend out, but didn't realize what it was for. And we all just move forward. And this Dodgers team that looks like an absolute powerhouse can just do its thing for 162 games.
Well, it's about as good an answer as you'll hear anywhere. So Houston in the Final Four, that's where we're at. Okay. Let's get to our quick hits, wrap up today's episode. Scottie Scheffler is on the tear of all tears in the world of golf. He's won over $8 million in his last two golf tournaments. Is this the guy that will propel us into the new era of golf, even amidst all of its controversies?
I think so. I'm on the record internally on being on shaming him as boring Scottie Scheffler, and whatever he may lack off the course in terms of charisma, he's certainly making up for on the course, because this guy is nails. He is an absolute cold-hearted beast with that club. Two wins, one third place, six top tens. He's made all seven cuts this year. He's already amassed almost $11 million on the PGA Tour. We've got that on SpotTrack right now, actually. He's a monster, and he's coming off maybe his best season yet. So if this is going to be version 2.0 of that, and he's got back-to-back Scottie Scheffler runs, this is going to have to put him in some pretty decorated territory in terms of what the PGA is. And boy, do they need it. They need a superstar, runaway, number one guy to look at, so that it's not just, is Rory good anymore? Because I feel like we've had a decade of, is Rory good anymore? And if this guy might be great, not just good, it'll be so, so important for this tour.
The co-favorite to win the Masters is Rory McIlroy. And the favorite,
of course it is.
The other co-favorite.
Like the Dallas Cowboys, right? Who are probably, number four for the Super Bowl right now?
Who's betting Rory? Why would you not just take that money and put it on Scottie Scheffler?
If you're betting Rory, go bet Dak to win the MVP, because it's the same conversation.
I would rather put my money on Dak. Blake Snell is now a San Francisco Giant. We are, for our purposes, a week away from the start of the season. Is there anyone left out there to be had in the free agent market world for Major League Baseball teams?
Yeah, there were two other pitchers, Michael Lorenzen and Jordan Montgomery, both had ties. Yeah,
waiting
Texas
on those.
And Lorenzen just signed with the Texas Rangers, the freaking defending champs, for $4.5 million. He may be their number two starter to start this season. So the rich getting richer there. And I don't know what's going on with Montgomery. I've heard the Yankees have limped back into that conversation. They're going to lowball that, because it's obvious that their tax situation scares the bejesus out of them, and they don't want to touch it much more than they have right now. So Montgomery's going to sign somewhere. I'm hoping it's a smaller market team that still wants to kind of pump their chest up with a player like this for 2024. But it feels like it might be one of the big boys coming in again and just waiting to lowball another contract.
The college football playoff and ESPN agreed to a new deal that's worth over at $7.8 billion over the next 6 years. So we're thumbs up, full steam ahead, 12-team playoff, already a booming success. Is that fair?
Yeah, I get it. I don't know what's going to happen with some of these conferences and things like that. And it's certainly not the sport we grew up with, that's for darn sure. But the interest is high. The transfer portal keeps the transaction wire absolutely on fire. It's going to be a different version of college sports, that's for sure. But as long as it's on ESPN and everybody's happy, it's probably worth much more than $7 billion. I have to be honest.
All right, let's get your final four predictions. Who you got? Get the brackets out right here. Oh
my gosh, go ahead. While I pull mine up, yours away, sir.
This is my wife's bracket.
Oh, let's hear it.
She fills hers out. It takes me 4 hours, Mike, to fill out my bracket. It took her 10 minutes.
Yeah, me too. I'm a 10-minute guy. Because you know what I do? I kind of fluff through my bracket, and then I make serious targeted bets. I bet on it.
Yes.
Especially that's at halftime. If there's an underdog or a favorite down at halftime, that's money to be made. You know what I mean? There's so many things happening at once. It's just money to be made.
That is a great way to look at it. So wifey has UConn, North Carolina, Houston, and Purdue going a little chalky there with North Carolina and Purdue. Yeah. she always beats me, so I get a little too cute with mine. North Carolina, Purdue in the final, and Purdue wins the national championship. Boy, that would be a nice little bounce back from last year. I have Creighton, Houston, Auburn, and Arizona in my final four, with Auburn as my champion.
All right, yours makes a lot more sense. You've definitely thought about this for sure. I went pretty chalky as well. I've got UConn, Illinois, Houston, Kentucky. And I've got two seeds, Houston beating UConn in the finals. So, oh wait, I'm lying. I'm looking at the wrong portion of my bracket. That's how freaking messed up I am. Ready? UConn, Alabama, Houston, South Carolina, which is
South Carolina.
Yeah, they're never going to get there. They're going to be a first round exit.
That would already lose me money. I'm on Oregon. So
I should probably bet that. I should probably bet South Carolina right now. Houston beating UConn.
All right. Do not take this as gospel, folks. We're just having fun over here. Check me out on Twitter at Brandon Kravitz. And if you're looking for a podcast assist, audio production of any kind, AuthenticAudioPro.com for more details on that. And most importantly, hit subscribe and rate this podcast you are listening to, SpotTrack.com, for all of the latest in the sports contractual world. Mike, always a pleasure. Best of luck to you and your bets and your brackets.